2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you until 4 o'clock. To the phone lines we venture off to. He hops on every week. We're always thankful for his time and his presence. Arif Hassan with us. Find his work. He covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage in the Daily Norseman. You can find much of his stuff at zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Arif, as always, thank you for the time. Teddy Bridgewater back on the active roster. Can you give those who haven't read it yet maybe a sneak preview of your article on Zone Coverage? Because I found it to be very fascinating, referencing why you think Teddy Bridgewater should be the starting quarterback.
The argument functionally just comes down to you have to figure out who you have. He's in a free agency year. The Vikings definitely want to extend this player. We really need to know who the true Teddy Bridgewater is, and if that takes a couple of games, they're going to be in a bad spot if, you know, the only time you figure out who he really is at this point is in a playoff game. So play him as soon as possible. His injury recovery has been 440 days, which is longer than almost every other lower body injury that quarterbacks have suffered. So it's actually not a very short amount of time. You're not really rushing him back. And the upside is just so explosive that it has the possibility of taking the Vikings further in the playoffs this year. It's not just about gathering information, but it's also about I think maximizing the potential of a pretty good team.
We know Case Keenum has already been named the starter for the game Sunday in Washington. How surprised would you be? I said yesterday, the word I used was stunned, and I said I didn't think I was embellishing or exaggerating. I said I would be stunned, Arif, if Teddy didn't start some games by the end of this season, even knowing that Case Keenum is starting this Sunday. So how stunned would you be if Teddy didn't start at all at some point during the regular season?
It would be absolutely stunning. And I think it would probably speak to, either how conservative the organization is, you've got a good thing going, you don't want to, upset the apple cart, or speak to, maybe Teddy hasn't recovered in a way that they're confident in. It would have to be one of those two things. I can't really think of a third thing unless Case Keenum legitimately, balls out, which... It's been a while.
How tough of a spot is this for Mike Zimmer? Because I believe he wants Teddy to be the starter, still envisions him potentially as a franchise quarterback, but you mentioned it, the team has been winning with Case Keenum as the starter, not because of Case Keenum in many games, not in spite of him, somewhere right in the middle. So how tough is this spot for Mike Zimmer trying to decide and eventually going with Keenum at least for this Sunday?
It's definitely a tough spot. I mean, there's something to the belief that, quarterbacks are very, very responsible for wins, even when, you've got a defensive head coach that wants to give a lot of credit to the defense. We've been in seasons where the defense has been better than the offense. There's just something to the notion that quarterbacks are just so critical to winning that if you change the quarterback who has been involved, who has been there and wins, that you're really going to, hurt things. And that's a difficult mindset to get out of. Plus, there's a lot of pressure on you. I think if you start Case and he loses, not many people are going to blame you. If you start Teddy and he loses, a bunch of people are going to blame you. So you're in kind of a weird spot.
How much do you think winning, and I'm not trying to rip on Case Keenum here, it's a weird, weird spot, Arif, because I think Case Keenum, in my estimation, he has been better than I thought he would be, but it's still not, outside of the Tampa Bay game, it's still not stellar football, and I think at times where they have won, he hasn't had great games, but because they've won, we don't really talk about it. So how much has the winning for the Vikings, and they've done plenty of it so far, 6-2 is the mark, how much has that helped mask maybe some of the not-so-good games that Case Keenum has had?
Oh, no, significantly. I mean, he's had some really poor games. I mean, it was great that he was good against Chicago. It's great that he was fantastic against Tampa Bay. He had a decent second half against the Browns. But, for the most part, the team is kind of just doing more to pull him along. And there have been a lot of problems. He's thrown a pick in each of the last three games. It feels like he should have thrown more than three picks in the last couple of games. But I think the Vikings have been kind of lucky in terms of interception luck. And so, the fact that you've got a W at the end of the day, it really blunts and mutes all that criticism because it really feels like you're nitpicking for nothing when really what you're trying to do is figuring out the best way to move forward.
Always enjoy his time with us on the program. Arif Hasan, our guest this afternoon. Find his work through Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. You referenced it a couple minutes ago. What is Teddy Bridgewater's contract situation now that he's on the active roster? Because I've still seen conflicting reports with possible like side door escape routes here and there, and so I'm kind of confused as to what the contract situation states.
So the Vikings think that his contract will toll, but they also don't want it to get there. If Teddy plays in a game this year, or even if he starts a game, they're just going to try and re-sign him. But you know, if they don't, then there's going to be a really weird situation where probably Teddy's team is going to challenge whether or not he should be tolled based on the language of the CBA. The Vikings will obviously try to retain some value unless they think that Teddy just can't play. But, you know, it doesn't seem like we're going to head towards that relatively acrimonious situation. I think the Vikings will just extend him. But, you know, if Bridgewater's team is right, he's a free agent. If not, there's you know, some interesting questions about, you know, what to do.
And the Vikings, I think we're both in agreement here, Reef. They need to, like, find out what they have with Teddy Bridgewater. And I say that, and I already draw pause a little bit just because of the situation they're in. They're 6-2 right now, and knowing that it'll probably take live game action and a good amount of it for Teddy to be fully comfortable again, it's just a tough spot to try to formulate. I don't think there is a concrete right answer that's just out there for Mike Zimmer to grasp onto, right?
Yeah, no, there's an argument for everything. Like, I wouldn't have had to write that article if it was just intuitive what you needed to do. I think every sort of course of action is relatively justifiable, keeping Case in, you know, warming Teddy up over the course of a couple of games and a couple of series, starting Bridgewater at home at US Bank Stadium instead of on the road. You know, a bunch of reasons for a bunch of different sort of approaches to this problem.
Mike Zimmer said yesterday at his presser they're going to more than likely go with two quarterbacks on Sunday, Case and Teddy being the two, drawing me to the conclusion, Arif, that Kyle Slaughter won't be on the roster. So knowing that it's just those two guys, they have to feel perfectly fine with Teddy if something were to happen to Case Keenum, right? I can't imagine they'd only roll with two quarterbacks if they were still iffy on Teddy, knowing that if something happened to Keenum, he would have his number called.
Yeah, they would absolutely have to be. For them to not just say that Teddy's the backup, but to say we're probably only going to roll with two quarterbacks into this game, they would absolutely have to be comfortable with the fact that he's healthy. The question is, you know, if he hasn't practiced with the first team. I think it's all sort of like game flow questions at this point and not health questions.
Would you agree that Mike Zimmer still wants Teddy to be the guy? I mean, in the long run, that he probably envisions Teddy as a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, and I think Zimmer's got a bit of an emotional connection, too. He kind of thinks of Teddy as like a son. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of, you know, put a thumb on the scale a little bit in terms of, like, the weekly evaluations. But you know, he's going to try to be objective. But I think that they know that in an ideal scenario, it's going to be Teddy who's going to be the quarterback of the future, who's going to be, you know, signed to, you know, potentially a fairly long deal and kind of lead the team going forward. And so they're going to work as if, you know, that ideal situation is possible.
I'm curious, do you think, and I don't know, maybe you know this answer, and maybe you don't, we can just speculate a little bit. Do you think anyone else had a say in who was starting on Sunday against Washington? I'm just wondering, like, maybe Pat Shurmur feels comfortable with some of the play calls with Case Keenum, and maybe he sits on that side of the fence that says, hey, we've got a decent thing going, even though Case hasn't, you know, lit the world on fire outside of the Tampa game. Do you think anyone else had a say in who was starting under center on Sunday besides Zimmer?
I think that a couple of people have input, but I think that Zimmer has sort of the right of first refusal on sort of any decision anyone else makes, and really ultimately makes that final decision. So, you know, if Shurmur says, you know, I'm really just comfortable with Case this week, I want to roll forward with him, you know, that doesn't obligate Zimmer to play or to name Case the starter, but, you know, he respects his offensive coaches, he'll probably take that into account. So I think that's really how that works.
Find his work, zonecoverage.com, his podcast, other work through the Daily Norseman, Arif Hasan, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz. I wanted to look, as we usually do on a week-in, week-out basis, at the landscape of the NFC North. The Vikings have a two-game cushion on Green Bay and Detroit. They both sit at 4-4. Green Bay, to me, is falling into irrelevancy. As it pertains to Detroit, though, Arif, when you strictly stack up remaining schedules, Detroit has a clear-cut advantage in that department, don't they? Because I see the Bears twice, the Browns, the Bucks, Ravens, Packers, Bengals, all on the schedule for Detroit the rest of the way. Meanwhile, Minnesota starts in D.C., not going to be easy post-bye week. Then they host the upstart Rams, then three straight on the road. It's a pretty lenient schedule for the Lions, which has to be factored into all of this, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Lions definitively have like an easier schedule than the Vikings. If the Vikings beat the Lions on Thanksgiving, you know, that's going to help, like, resolve a lot of things. But, you know, like you said, that's a road game, and that kicks off that road streak. And, you know, five of the next eight games are on the road. It's just, like, not an ideal scenario for the Vikings to try and close it out. But if they can beat the Lions, they're in a really good spot because not only, you know, does that, you know, force the Lions to lose, it means the Vikings essentially hold the tiebreaker, you know, things go, you know, one way or the other. So it gives them kind of a one-game cushion. And so that's going to be kind of critical. It's not as if the Vikings don't have, you know, sort of control of their own destiny, as it were. They do. It's just, you know, like you said, there's not a lot of wiggle room given sort of how much easier it is to go for the Lions than it is for the Vikings. That said, I think the Vikings are a higher quality team, so I think that they'll do a better job sort of navigating their schedule than the Lions will navigate even their sort of, I'm not going to call it a cupcake schedule, it's still the NFL, but much easier schedule.
Vikings, as we mentioned, in D.C. taking on Kirk Cousins this weekend. What matchups are you looking forward to watching unravel in that contest?
Well, definitely looking forward to Everson Griffin and possibly T.J. Clemmings. It sounded like Trent Williams was seen at practice, but he's still on the sidelines, so we'll see whether or not he'll be good to go, but it sounds like he won't be. And that's going to be a fairly critical matchup because Kirk Cousins is I think he's like fourth in the NFL in the clean pocket in terms of passer rating, which is obviously it's great, but he drops to something like 18th or 19th in the NFL versus pressure. And so the ability to put pressure on a quarterback, obviously that's key in every matchup, but I think it's particularly key in this matchup. I think Kirk Cousins drops off worse than most quarterbacks do by a fairly substantial margin when there's a muddy pocket. So that matchup's going to be important. The Josh Doctson matchup, with whether it's against Xavier Rhodes or Trey Waynes, that's going to be critically important. On the other side of the ball, the Washington has sort of a weak interior run defense. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they're going to go with Latavius Murray because, you know, hey, inside runs, maybe you want to go with Murray, or whether or not they're going to stick with Jerick McKinnon, who's been performing really, really well.
For Washington, they sit at 4-4. I'm wondering, what do you make of the Redskins and their season to date? Are they going to end up being a contender? Because their losses have all been to legitimate teams. They've lost to Philadelphia twice, and they lost to Kansas City and Dallas a couple weeks ago. But they impressed the heck out of me. They I didn't expect them to go on the road and beat the Seahawks last week. They did that in Seattle 17-14. So I've kind of been back and forth on what I make of Washington, and I'm fairly indifferent. What do you see from them?
They're a fairly difficult team to predict in general. It seems like they don't play up to their competition, and so you know they're better than a lot of these bad teams, but they occupy sort of this narrow middle tier where they can't seem to do well against some other pretty good teams. And I don't think that's a reason to take this game lightly. I think that they've got the talent to do it. It just has to click in some ways. But they're a very difficult team to predict. Like, some weeks it feels like their secondary is really, it's on fire. They've got a fantastic set of cornerbacks. D'Angelo Hall had a pretty good game last week as a free safety. They've got sort of everything rolling in the secondary. And then other weeks it just feels like they can't stop anything. They're a sieve. And so they're just a really difficult team to predict.
So how are you feeling then about the Vikings' chances on the road against a right now 500 Washington team that, as we mentioned, just won on the road in Seattle?
I feel pretty good. I think that the Vikings have the ability to exploit some pressure points. Like I said, the T.J. Clemmings one is going to be important. Just some pressure points throughout Washington. You figure out sort of where their consistent weaknesses have been, if they have had any consistent ones. And I think that the Vikings can exploit that. So I'm optimistic.
Let's look across the rest of the NFC North. Arif Hasan, by the way, our guest this afternoon here on AM 1450 KATE. Find his work, zonecoverage.com, and through the Daily Norseman as well. Across the landscape of the North, I don't want to talk Browns-Lions too much. I think Detroit wins that game, but who knows, any given Sunday in the NFL. The Packers, though, play the Bears in an NFC North rivalry, and I honestly think Chicago will win this game, and they're favored by 5.5 points. We were talking off the air. I knew they were favored by 5.5. I didn't know that it opened at 3.5, so the money is hedging heavily towards Chicago in this matchup so far. It's the first time, Arif, since 2008 the Bears have been favored over the Packers head-to-head. How bad are things in Green Bay right now?
Oh, that's rough. 2008, I think, was Aaron Rodgers' quote-unquote rookie year. So that kind of puts things into perspective. Yeah, I think the Packers are in a really difficult situation, and honestly, they should just kind of ride it out. I mean, I know there's talk of Aaron Rodgers potentially returning late in the season, help with the playoff push. I think that playoff push is just not going to happen. They're going to fall a little bit too far behind in the intervening games. They might as well get like some pretty good draft picks out of it. The defense doesn't really have the ability to carry the team. They're also a fairly volatile secondary. It feels like they can force turnovers some weeks, and they just let a bunch of passes by go other weeks. And they just can't really remain consistent. And when you don't have an offense that has the ability to sort of paper over those things, and Brett Hundley is not just a below average backup, it seems like he's significantly below average, then I don't think there's anything you can do. There's no way I think that the Packers can improve their team in the short term.
Does this exploit or change your opinion perhaps on Mike McCarthy or anyone on that coaching staff? Maybe you want to go higher up to Ted Thompson? Because I think a lot of people assume that, like, man, this Packers team, we've heard it for years. Like, it's Aaron Rodgers and then just a bunch of guys. Like, they have certain pieces in certain spots, but in large part, it's just Aaron Rodgers. But I don't think even Packer fans thought it would be this bad without number 12 in the huddle. Does it exploit or change your opinion about Mike McCarthy or anyone else?
I've always been a little, I'm not going to say suspicious of Mike McCarthy, but like a little underwhelmed. It feels like when the Packers have had really good talent, 2011 is obviously a great example, they haven't really been able to exploit it, and then they haven't really been able to I think, draw out the talent of some of the more interesting other players. And so I think a lot of that does fall on Mike McCarthy, but I do think that the front office has just been a little bit complacent. I know the Packers are famous for not signing free agents, but that's a really easy thing to do when you're hitting in the draft, and when you don't hit in the draft, you have to find other ways to get talented players into the team, and I feel like they neglected that. So I think that there's a lot of blame to go around, and it's not really fair to just blame Mike McCarthy, but in saying that, I'm not absolving him either.
If you're Aaron Rodgers, and this might sound completely foolish, whenever his contract is up, and I know it's got, I don't know, a couple years left on it perhaps, but if you're him, would you consider other options? And I'm being serious. I'm not trying to be funny or anything, but if you're Aaron Rodgers, would you just automatically lock back in with Green Bay, seeing what this team and this franchise is without him?
No, I don't think so. I think that he knows that, not that you know, he's system dependent or anything, but he knows that he can win in Green Bay, and he knows how important he is to Green Bay. And, you know, it's not as if he won't get money elsewhere, but I think that he can really maximize his contract value and maximize his, I think, ability to win when he's surrounded by a system that's, you know, tailor-built to him, and they know that they can win with him. So I don't think I don't think he'll move anywhere else, and I don't think that there's much of an incentive to. It's not like when Peyton Manning was, like, shopping around and he could have gone to this great defense in San Francisco or this great defense in Denver. I don't think that, you know, there's that opportunity left either.
On the flip side, too, because they are playing Chicago, and I wanted to pick your brain on what the Bears have done. They're 3-5, so the record would indicate somewhat underwhelming for the Bears. But, man, when I've watched them a couple of times this year, they've looked far better. They've exceeded what I thought they would look like. I'm still waiting for them to let Mitchell Trubisky, air it out a little bit more. Do you think we start to see that post-bye week for Chicago?
I think we'll see it mostly because it'll be the Packers secondary, honestly. It really feels like they're protecting Trubisky from like the worst throws, which, of course, is really limiting the offense in a pretty big way. And I think a lot of it just has to do with what he's capable of, at least at the moment. So I don't know that over the course of the season that they'll really kind of loosen things up, but I think in this game, has got a really good opportunity to do it without, again, risking too much.
How much might be factored in as well that the supporting cast as far as wide receivers go? I mean, Zach Miller's gone for the year. Cameron Meredith never played a snap in the regular season. How much of it with Chicago do you think they're limiting Mitchell Trubisky throwing the ball because of a lack of a great supporting cast?
Yeah, I think that plays a role. I do think that some of the thinking is, you know, we'll get that supporting cast back. He'll grow as a quarterback, and he'll be able to use them. They'll get open in ways that he can kind of exploit. But I think that the flip side of that is that they know that he doesn't have the ability to, like, currently throw receivers open, doesn't have the ability to sort of get past sort of that second level of the progression without getting, you know, happy feet. And I think that they know that he's not really in a position where he can elevate the play of the teammates around him. And so they're not going to put him in a position where they put too much on him.
We'll finish up with our off notes. What do you make of Jerry Jones potentially suing the NFL over a potential Roger Goodell extension? It's fascinating stuff. When you really dive in and read as to sort of some of the underlines and what is going on, it's incredibly intriguing. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I know that there's an interesting quote from Jerry Jones back when they were deciding, and he's a new owner, they were deciding what to do after Pete Rozelle was gone, and Jerry Jones, and they were debating over, you know, who to make the commissioner, and Jerry Jones was basically saying, who cares? We're the ones who run the NFL. And that's just, he just genuinely believes that, you know, the owners have, like, 100% of the power, and that, you know, makes sense. I mean, like, that's kind of how the system is designed to operate. But at the same time, I mean, he's not on the compensation committee, and so, like, that's just, it's literally, like, not his role. I don't know what the legal basis for a suit is, but he's always been kind of interfering beyond his formal powers within the confines of the NFL, and this is just another example of it.
We'll wrap up on a somewhat lighter note. There were some scrums last week throughout the NFL, so I'm going to have you choose one end or the other, Arif, and let's set it a UFC-style setting. So UFC-style setting, they're in the octagon. Who wins a fight, Jalen Ramsey or A.J. Green?
I think Jalen Ramsey. I mean, A.J. Green has a little bit longer reach. I mean, they both have just these outrageously long arms. And I think A.J. Green's also a little bit taller, and he's got a little bit more weight to him. So he's got all these physical advantages, but it really does feel like, kind of despite, you know, the way that we saw that fight break out, it feels like to me that Jalen Ramsey is just a scrappier fighter, and those physical advantages are not that big. I mean, they're both physical freaks.
Marshawn Lattimore or Mike Evans? They were involved in a scrum as well. That it was kind of instigated by Jameis Winston, and then Mike Evans just blindsides Lattimore. Who wins UFC-style setting between those two?
Not close, Mike Evans.
Yeah, I thought that one was too easy. I was thinking about doing like a 2v2 where it'd be Jameis and Evans against Lattimore and then his choosing of another teammate, but I went head-to-head. By the way, how does Evans get suspended for a game but A.J. Green doesn't? Is it because A.J. Green was ejected from his game, so he missed a large chunk of it anyways, and Evans wasn't, or that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me?
I think it's because there was an instigation from Jalen Ramsey, which I don't see that push as that, but I think that maybe played a role. I'm not quite sure, but I mean, no one can really divine the NFL punishment system as it is.
Last one for you, then we'll wrap it up. Jerry Jones or Roger Goodell, UFC-style setting? I feel like it's an easy one, but maybe not.
Oh, Jerry Jones. I don't care like that he's like 40 years older. Absolutely, Jerry.
I was hoping you'd go with that answer because that's what I wanted to hear. Find his work through Zone Coverage in the Daily Norseman. Arif, as always, thank you for the time.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll put a bow on the show next.